message evolves.
Why? 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 Why?
6. CHRY 105.5 Radio Basics. What's going on, everybody? Sorry about that interlude. We just had to play some Mike out of respect. Some MJ. He was pretty outspoken about, you know, racism and police brutality. There's a couple clips on YouTube, but the sound is like too messed up. I wanted to play it, but couldn't get it done in time. So, the bulk of this show, I think we're going to take up the issue of Iran. And what's going on in...
First, introduce me, please.
This is David, everybody. David is a co-host of Radio Basics. I thought maybe he would introduce himself, but he's a pretty shy guy.
Very shy.
Yeah, and myself, I'm Justin. And I was late getting out here.
Very late.
I had car troubles.
I'm disappointed.
Dave was here, so...
Holding it down.
Okay, so before commercial break, I'll just explain what we're doing. We're going to be talking with Farshad. He's a member of Basics, and basically what he's going to come in here and do is explain what's going on in Iran and, you know, cut through what the mainstream media seems to be saying. They kind of portray Mousavi as sort of the progressive revolutionary hero.
He's not.
Yep. And you know, he's going to explain Ahmadinejad from the perspective of you know, Iranian women and Iranian workers, and he's going to be a good interview. So we're going to get him on in a bit. We're just going to go to a track first, get him on, and we'll start the show. So
you're sweating, Justin.
I was running.
Of your father. The ink of a scholar is worth 1,000 times more than the blood of a mother. Yeah. We came through the storm, nooses on our necks, and a smallpox blanket to keep us warm on a 747 on the Pentagon lawn. Wake up, the alarm clock is connected to a bomb. Anthrax lab on a West Virginia farm. Shorty ain't learned to walk, already heavily armed. Civilians and little children is especially harmed. Camouflage Taurus, Bibles and glorious Korans. The books that take you to heaven and let you meet the Lord there have become misinterpreted reasons for warfare. Reread them with blind eyes, I guarantee you there's more there. Rich must be blind, cause they ain't see the poor. Yeah. Need to open up a park, just close 10 schools. We don't need them. Can you please call the fire department? They down here marching for freedom. Burn down ATVs, turn ATVs on the teacher. Man. Cause things the same because we lack the same color. And that's gray, now that's May. Can't burn his cross cause he can't afford the gasoline. Now if a Muslim woman strapped with a bomb on the bus with the seconds running give you the jitters, just imagine an American based Christian organization planning the poison water supplies to bring the second coming quicker. Again, they ain't living properly. Wreck them all for a little democracy. Turn their whole culture to a mockery. Give them Coca-Cola for their property. Give them gum, give them guns, get them young, give them fun. But if they ain't giving it up, then they ain't getting none. And don't give them all, no, man, just give them some. It's the paper, some of these cops must be Al-Qaeda. Get the more money that they make, the more money that they make, the better. Give them pen, make them pull gold from river. Give black man crack, Glock and things. Give red man cracks, slot machines. Now bring it back, 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 bring it back. Bring it back.
This is William Hart of the Delphonics, and you're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
CHRY 105.5 FM. Welcome back to Radio Basics. So as the political protests unfold in Iran, and if you haven't seen the footage, I suggest you get to YouTube ASAP. It seems the political authorities in Iran are losing legitimacy by the second. But while the mainstream media is portraying Mousavi as a progressive hero against the outspoken Ahmadinejad, many are saying that the difference between Mousavi and Ahmadinejad is minor and insignificant. Indeed, the protests are more about women's rights, workers' rights, and a fundamental change to the social relations of Iranian capitalism. Tonight we are joined by Farshad. Farshad is a Basics member, is very familiar with the Iranian situation. Are you with us, Farshad?
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, brothers.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on.
What's up, Farshad?
How you doing, man?
David Chin.
All right, so Farshad, can you explain maybe the lead-up to the election and what was sort of popular sentiment?
I mean, like, what's really important is, like, if you're following the coverage here in the West, a lot of times you get this kind of idea of an Iran that's been, like, quiet for some 30 years since the 1979 revolution, that all of a sudden people are, you know, all of a sudden just, you know, out of this kind of dormancy have risen up. Now, what's important to look at when you're talking about Iran is that, like, you know, people have been, you know, women's movements, student movements, working class, you know, union organizers have been, you know, fighting for a really long time. And the only reason we don't really hear about this often is because of the immense repression of the Islamic Republic. You know, trade union leaders get tossed in jail, like, you know, every month. You know, workers get fired whenever they try to organize independent unions. Students find themselves in the, you know, the political, you know, among the thousands of political prisoners that, you know, currently exist in Iran. So, I mean, that's the kind of, you know, that's the situation that Iranians lived in. You know, highly repressive, you know, sexually repressive, you know, anti-working class environment. And so this is the situation of Iran. But in the lead up to the election, what's important is to, like, look at what was really happening. You know, we talk about Mousavi, we talk about Ahmadinejad, and a lot of times, you know, again, in the Western press, we're looking at Mousavi as this kind of, like, you know, this is the alternative that Iranians are looking toward. This is their hope, in a sense. Now, what we really need to do is, when we look at this coverage here, is look at concretely, who is Mousavi? You know, where does he come from? What is his history in Iran? Right? And when we look at it, Mousavi and Ahmadinejad are really within the ruling faction of Iran. They're within two different sort of cliques or factions within the ruling elite. And what this whole election, fraud, this whole thing that's happening right now is based around that dispute within different factions of the ruling elite. Like, if you look at Mousavi, some of his backers are people like Rafsanjani, kind of known as the Iranian Rockefeller, right? So that's what that represents, that sort of that political threat you're seeing, you know, really propped up on our, you know, our Western television screens, and not much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you make of how a lot of people portray Ahmadinejad as a good guy, sort of fighting, you know, the U.S. and sort of sticking up against Israel and things like that? He's sort of portrayed as sort of a progressive leader.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. And that's been, like, something that, like, especially, you know, among, you know, activists, progressive people here in Canada, that debate's come up really, you know, a lot. You know, this Ahmadinejad is anti-imperialist. This is what we'll hear, you know, some people talk about. And I think that's an incorrect way of approaching situation in Iran, right? As you know, we can't say in some ways, you know, the Islamic Revolution of 1979 pushed away the American and some of the American business interests in Iran. But at the same time, if you look right now, like, you know, countries like, you know, imperialist China, Russia, these countries have their hands in Iran, you know, to different degrees, right? So to really say that, you know, Iran is this, you know, this bulwark or this, like, sort of this bastion of anti-imperialism is an incorrect way to look at it. Well, on top of that, like, anti-imperialist, like, I mean, even forgetting anti-imperialists, to even consider Ahmadinejad or the Islamic government as progressive is really to ignore the long history of, you know, massacre of political prisoners, of leftists, of communists in Iran, of students, of working class organizers. This has continued, like, all throughout, without any end in the last 30 years. It's an important thing to look at. But on top of that, another important thing to look at is, when you look at Mousavi, you know, my parents are political refugees from Iran. And, you know, for all this talk of, you know, Mousavi being this, you know, progressive alternative to Ahmadinejad, Mousavi was in power during the 80s. And it was during that time when we saw some of the biggest massacres. You know, within 1 year in 1987, they killed 8,000 political prisoners in 1 year. right? And so this is, you know, my point is, when we look at Ahmadinejad and Mousavi, we can't really, like, they're two sides of the same sort of government, right? And they both have been involved in the dirt of repressing the people, have been involved in stealing the oil wealth of the people and not using that to, you know, serve the people, the impoverished people of Iran. And that's what, you know, these two parties really represent. They're parties of the Islamic dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like Mousavi, when he's portrayed as like a reformist, only wants to institute reforms insofar as to make the regime stronger and sort of update it, but not to fundamentally change the social relations.
And that's really important too, because like on a lot of important questions, Mousavi is very, very, very similar to Ahmadinejad. Like Mousavi's backers are the Iranian ruling elite. Like for all this talk that he might be a puppet of the West, there's nothing really to base that on, right? There's financial backers, there's political backers. Or, you know, they're the elite of Iran. You know, like they're the capitalists of the Iranian within Iran. But on top of that, though, at the same time, you know, okay, let's go. Okay, Ahmadinejad, like, you know, there's problems with him. Mousavi, yeah, sure, there might be problems with him. But what do we make of the movement on the ground? That's an important thing to look at. Because as much as Mousavi, you know, and he's a reformist who's not really going to bring any change in any serious way, even some of the demands that he's putting forward, he most likely isn't going to come forward in any complete way on. You know, even regardless of that, we have to look at what this space is creating, an opportunity for the Iranian people, for workers, for women, for students, for youth to come out. And, you know, to use that sort of, that vacuum of power in the context of this, you know, factional dispute among the ruling elite to organize themselves, to come out on the streets, to put forward demands. Like right now what we're seeing is the independent labor unions in Iran putting forward demands for, you know, a right to unionize, a right to strike, you know, a minimum wage of 1 million toman, the release of all political prisoners, an end to sexual apartheid. These are all very progressive demands that have come out because of this factional dispute. Now, at the same time, you know, if we look at the videos on YouTube or, you know, CNN, you know, you'll see a lot of Iranian, some of these, you know, a lot of the protesters, some of them are wearing green. But slowly and, you know, step by step, day by day, we're seeing more and more people becoming completely disillusioned with the system in its entirety. You know, the slogan started, you know, from like, you know, death to, you know, where's my vote? Or, you know, death to Ahmadinejad. And step by step, we're seeing, you know, people are now challenging the government. They're saying, like, death to the dictatorship, death to Khamenei, who, for those who don't know, is the supreme leader, the religious supreme leader of Iran. So, I mean, at a point, like, we're seeing the movement progress every day, the people are becoming more and more conscious. And so, in a sense, I think it's important to distance the uprisings of the people from some of the major political players that are almost, you know, the only thing that is covered in most of the mainstream press. And realize that we need to really be in solidarity with those people on the ground who are really fighting against an extremely reactionary government in Iran.
Mm-hmm. Farshad, who are the Revolutionary Guard, and what's their role in this?
Well, I mean, Revolutionary Guard are an important pillar of the Islamic State. What they do, I mean, like, they were, I mean, on top of having a police, the Revolutionary Guard were sort of a more elite, and I guess more, you know, more dedicated, a bit higher paid, cadre of the Islamic State to, you know, repress the movements of the people. Whether, you know, again, whether they be workers' movements, you know, last May Day, you know, they did crush the worker strikes, I mean, and the worker protests in Tehran and across, you know, Iran. These are the sort of the shock troops of the Islamic government to repress any movement of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I know just reading history in the lead up to this interview, you know, the working class of Iran went through what, like, working class in, say, Europe and United States went through in centuries, but they went through it in decades as they modernized. And, you know, in the 70s, like, they almost led the Islamic Revolution before it was Islamic, right? Like,
that's true.
It was a workers' movement. Are we seeing that sort of thing?
You know, it really is hard to say because, I mean, like, the Islamic government's hold, its repressive hold, hasn't disappeared. It's really hard to say, you know, how large are the social movements? Mm-hmm. How powerful are they? You know, how big are, like, the left-wing or the communist organizations in the country? Like, a lot of times, you know, there's at best estimates. And we also have to remember, like, as much as the people are coming forward with these progressive demands, like, we're still waking up from the trauma of, you know, an extremely reactionary and repressive regime for 30 years that really stunted the development of any organizations of the people, mm-hmm. any working class organizations. At the same time, like when, again, you mentioned, you know, the 1979 revolution, that was a people's revolution. Like what brought down the Shah was like the oil worker strikes, the general strikes. You know, the workers played a key role, in that revolution. And in fact, they won many gains for the first couple of years. Like from 1979 to 1981, it was actually a period of time where people could really organize. There was a lot of political freedoms, and you know the left-wing organizations were really building and building until 1981. And so it's hard to see, you know, say what's exactly going to happen now. We've seen, you know, the auto workers engage in labor action. We've seen the independent trade unions put out calls of solidarity and threaten strikes. I mean, we're still seeing how it's going to unfold. It's a bit too early to say whether we're going to see a repeat of that kind of labor action, labor taking a lead role in any revolutionary movement, but we're definitely hopeful.
Mm-hmm, yeah, definitely. Can you comment on, say, women's struggles and what sort of role they're playing in all this?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, anyone who opens the TV or checks out some of these videos, you'll see, like women are some of the most militant youth or young people on the students on the street. We're, you know, playing some of the leading roles in some of the organizations. Now, at the same time, like, you don't have, like, if you look, it seems like, you know, there's no real formal or, you know, very clear organizations in Iran. But just from what we can pick up, we're seeing women making some of the biggest statements. We're seeing among the people who have been killed by the besieged thugs of the state, a lot of women have been killed. A lot of women have been tossed in jail and tortured. From this, we can gather that women are playing a key role in the struggle. And obviously, like, when you look at the kind of gender oppression or sexual apartheid that the Islamic State imposed, especially on women, we can understand how they are going to play a key role in that. And in a sense have always played a significant role in Iranian political movements for the last 50 years, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely. So is this a fundamental challenge to the Islamic regime in terms of like pointing the finger at the Supreme Leader?
Yeah, I really think this is something that the Islamic government is very unlikely to be able to recover from. Like, they might be able to put down the protests, you know, maybe in a week or 2 weeks' time through sheer violence, but I think the legitimacy of the Islamic State, I mean, you know, for a long time, a lot of Iranians have opposed it, but I think even now, especially, the legitimacy of the Islamic State has really fallen to ruins, and their movements have, like, unquestionably become much more powerful. The social movements have been swelling in numbers, and we're definitely seeing this on the ground. So I think this is definitely going to be a positive step, even if, like, today's movement is repressed, right? That, you know, movements go forward and back, and, like, this is definitely a good progressive step for us in Iran. That's what I'll say on that, but again, we're not completely sure. We're still seeing the events unfold.
Yeah, and it's tough even to get information out when, you know, with the control of the media. Can you comment on sort of the media situation?
Well, like, I've been, like, following a few of the blogs, and I have a few comrades here in Toronto that are linked up heavily with the communist movement back home. You know, even young folks who are political refugees here in Canada. And they're all respect. What we're seeing is, like, you know, people putting up blogs, like, their houses have been raided, like, arrest warrants have been, you know, average people who just run a website off their computers. I mean, we've all heard about, like, you know, the ban on reporters, how some reporters, even Western reporters, have been arrested. So, I mean, definitely it's hard to get media out of there. But, again, it's pretty interesting looking at the way the Internet has become, you know, used very usefully in the struggle. Like, there's a lot of, you know, access to media that's just coming from the grassroots, which I think is a good step.
Mm-hmm, definitely, yeah. And, I mean, the use of the media works, like, against any sort of power regime, in terms of even capturing just the slightest instance of police brutality, that video can be linked up on YouTube instantly.
Yeah.
Right, so it's almost impossible for the regimes nowadays to completely suppress any movement. Farshad, is there anything else you'd like to add, or any observations that you think our listeners would like to hear?
Yeah, I actually want to say one more thing. Like, we've actually just, you know, analyzed and looked at the situation a bit, but, you know, it's important for us here in Canada or in the West in general to begin moving on these issues. And for maybe any of our Iranian or Afghan listeners, some progressive Iranian Afghans here in Toronto are getting together to develop a youth organization, that's, you know, both going to put up a challenge against imperialism, but also look and provide solidarity to the movements in our countries back home. And also on top of that, start working around some of the issues that affect us here in Toronto, whether it be racist anti-terror laws, whether they be, you know, the Canadian government deporting some of our, you know, comrades, our political refugees here. So anyone who wants to check that out, who's listening right now, you can send an email down to iranianyouthgroup@gmail.com and link up with us.
Mm-hmm, yeah, likewise, too, you could link up with Basics. You can find all our information at basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. Farshad, thanks a lot, eh?
Thanks a lot, brothers.
Okay. Hey. Okay, so that was Farshad. Farshad has got links.
He does have links.
Mm-hmm, with, you know, what's going on in Iran, and I don't know, it seemed like pretty good analysis of what's going down, contrary to most reporting.
Well, I think most reporting seems to focus on the legitimacy of the voting itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the basic orientation of what was being analyzed in the conversation that Farshad was and yourself were engaged in seemed to approach it from a different and I think more valid point of view, which is that the governments themselves and the elections themselves are almost always rigged.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not rigged in a very technical sense where they actually cheat in voter registrations and fraud like that, it's always rigged in a sense that it's always stacked against the people. It's never fair representation of the people, working class people, women's mm-hmm. issues. It's always stacked against it, and it's always rigged anyways. Yeah. And so to sort of have the debate focus purely on bourgeois politics,
yeah,
or the institution or voting seems to amputate some of the important qualifications that have to be made, which are how would that election speak to working class people or women anyways, even if Mousavi were to have been elected. And I think all facts and all perspectives and all of his campaigns speak to a very similar and oppressive system, regardless of which of these two clowns were elected.
Yeah, these two phonies. And they also play up like that there's a big difference between Mousavi and Ahmadinejad. Like there's a big difference between, say, Bush and Kerry, or yeah, between Ignatieff and Harper.
Or even Bush and Obama.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, and what Farshad was saying is how they're making, like, legitimate demands, like social demands, like a rise in minimum wage, end of sexual apartheid. They're not saying, we want Mousavi in. Mm-hmm. Or we demand a recount, or, you know, or things like this, right? So, yeah.
I mean, I think it's quite similar to Obama. I mean, let's go and ask some women in Afghanistan if Obama's ascension to power has affected their daily living whatsoever. Or go to Congo and ask if his ascension to power has affected mm-hmm. the way in which lithium and some of the other valuable resources are being raped yeah. by the West.
Or even the most recent overthrow of the Honduran government, you know, which has huge economic ties to mm-hmm. the United States. Mm-hmm. It's not much goes down in Honduras without the United States knowing about it. So.
That's true. So boo to both of you guys.
Boo, thumbs down.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess, you know, we'll go to a track and come back with more Radio Basics.
Obama. Uzaore moyo ganderia, Maria niwe.
la Biblia, María mi rey. Upenyu imindubin, guarira me potejiento, usaore moyo kaniria.
Will be alright.
5.5 Radio Basics, we're back.
Basics, Michael Jackson. Again, there's three Michael Jackson songs.
I know. Keep playing.
Deserves it, I guess.
Yeah. I think so. You know, Michael, I just found this out. He broke the color barrier on MTV. It's the first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, first black guy to ever be on MTV, which, you know, I guess paved the way for millions of people. I think, you know, the scope and of that guy's influence and talent is huge.
Yeah. I think, well, he was never really too activist-y. He wasn't really too concerned, it seemed,
mm-hmm.
with too many really, really progressive activist notions of any sort of social transformation.
Yeah.
He seemed to be more of a commercialized type, Pepsi commercial type dude. Yeah. But his music and his life definitely, I think, intersected with issues around race, gender, masculinity. And however you really analyze him, I think that's sort of up to you. But there are some things that are important. Well, I mean, first of all, obviously it's a problem that he got more media coverage. His death got more media coverage than 1.5 dead million Iraqis,
mm-hmm.
or however millions of people have died in Afghanistan due to the imperialist wars. But I think I'll talk about one thing of Michael Jackson, the whole skin thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so either he had some sort of disease, which he tried to cover up with makeup or bleach, or he just bleached his skin for whatever reason. I think it's a problem if we sort of pathologize him for that. For the simple reason that, and this is true, go on YouTube and type Keri Davis. She did a little psychology test, a couple years ago, whereby she gave a whole bunch of young black kids dolls, a white one and a black one. And I think I've talked about this, and I use this for a lot of anecdotes. But they would give black kids under the age of six dolls, one black, one white one, and ask them which one they wanted. They almost all chose the white one. And then they asked which one is the good one, which one is the bad one. They all said that the white one was good and the black doll was bad. And then they were asked, which one are you? And they pointed to the black doll. Obviously, there's a race problem whereby a lot of African people of African descent are made to hate themselves because of a deep and powerful racism that seems to permeate into the psychology of even children who, for whatever reason, hate or are at the very least ashamed of their skin color. So before we pathologize Michael Jackson for if he had, and I don't know him, bleached his skin or done whatever, perhaps it's the system or society we live in that should be called sick or that we should pathologize. Because if they're making people want to sort of change your skin color and put your body through chemicals in order to sort of make yourself the norm, then perhaps it's not him who had the problem, but us.
Mm-hmm.
So, a couple things with Michael Jackson that should be discussed. We're not going to do it here too much. It's more of a political show, but...
Well, there's this one clip on YouTube that I wanted to bring on, but I couldn't, like, edit the sound. And it's kind of choppy, but it's worth checking out. And it's, you know, Michael Jackson, like, post-disease, you know, I guess in the 90s or something, you know, white skin, long hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's talking about how, like, he's talking about racism at, like, I guess, an anti-racism conference.
Oh, really?
And he's saying, like, you know, like it's just white people on the covers and stuff. And he's, you know, he's saying some like pretty radical stuff. And then he's saying, like, I look in the mirror and I know I'm black, and like I see a black person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like it's what you're saying. It throws open the whole contradictory nature of, you know, black white.
Mm-hmm.
And things like this. It's actually a good clip. Hopefully I can get that edited, but I failed this time.
You fail again.
I failed. I was just so broken up over the death that I couldn't bring myself to doing anything. But, you know, great music, great musician.
Influential man.
Huge.
Amazing, amazing artist.
Yeah.
His songs are still relevant. I can listen to that all night, and it doesn't seem dated one bit.
No.
And, I mean, I think there are issues to be debated on the person itself. It seems like a lot of mainstream press, and even artists, celebrities, they'll say the same thing. If you read the sort of tickers or any of the responses a lot of celebrities make, they're like, he was a wonderful performer. They sort of distance themselves from the person to sort of speak purely on his... Which is, I mean, clear, his amazing talents with regard to music. But I think there might be something to be said about who he was as a person in terms of his challenging of certain issues, even if he didn't mean to do it.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. So, you know what? I guess that's the end of the show. We might take a song, get a song, take us out. Do you have anything queued up there?
Or? I don't know.
No? I got one.
I want to play... What do you got?
Well, I don't know. It kind of throws... Still on the topic of, you know, race relations.
What?
KRS-One, Black Cop.
Good.
Yeah? Is that satisfactory?
It's satisfactory.
It's a good tune.
I'll play another Michael Jackson joint in the future.
Yeah?
And talk more about it.
Yeah, I'll try and get that clip edited for everyone out there. So, it's another edition of Radio Basic. Thanks for tuning in.
Rest in peace, Michael Jackson.
Rest in peace, Mike.
Though I still am upset that he's getting so much coverage when there's so many people dying every day. Stupid.
We gotta take over the media, Dave.
No. I'm scared.
We can do it. Okay. Radio Basics. Later, people.
Warfare is a new or a shock. It's black on black crime.